Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled The Essence of Buddhism, Part 2, by Lama Tom Broadwater. In The Essence of Buddhism, Part 1, Lama Tom explained that the essence of all the Buddha's teachings was the practice of loving-kindness and compassion. In this talk, Lama Tom discusses ways we can bring more awareness of loving-kindness into our lives. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning and welcome. Good to see you on this one of these dog days of summer. But there's relief later on coming, I hear. But again, thank you very much for coming this morning. Some of you have come from a distance. I believe there is one person that is here who has a home here, but also it came from Florida. So everyone is welcome, whoever you are. Glad you're here. What we do traditionally is take refuge in the Buddha, our teacher, his teachings, the Dharma, and particularly those that have, as a result of their following the Dharma, have become awakened, which is the Sangha. What we try to do when we come into any kind of teaching like this is to have three things: a big heart, open to everyone and to all experience, not excluding anybody or anything, knowing that everything in one way or another can be a teaching for us. So we keep our hearts open to that possibility. The next thing we have, and this is not original teaching on my part. It's Ken, who's a great teacher in Scotland. He gives his teaching. So to have a big heart, to have a loving heart, meaning you would wish all beings to be happy. And finally, again, an open heart, a big heart, and a loving heart. So we come to this with that sort of attitude. What we do then is we say a traditional prayer, and today we'll just say it in English, and we'll say it three times. If you are prompted to say it, that's fine. If this is not something part of your tradition, no problem. Just think open, loving, kind heart. So it's the refuge prayer. It's on this page. And we'll say it three times. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. In the Buddha, the Dharma, an assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Thank you. So the last time I was here, I talked about basically the fundamentals, the essential elements of Buddha's practice. And you could call this the essence of Buddhism, part 2. So I talked about what was essential. Now we'll go into that a little bit further in terms of practice. So what is the essence of Buddhism? It's loving kindness and compassion. What I said the last time, and I'm not just saying what I think, it's from this little pamphlet called Practice of Loving Kindness and Compassion by Kempo Carter Rinpoche. He gave a talk 40 years ago on this subject. It is in our library and you can pick it up. You can also buy it at the bookstore at KTD. So what he said and what I reiterate here is that any genuine practice, any true spiritual practice of Dharma requires loving kindness and compassion. They are the life force of our practice. Without it, it's empty words. And certainly without them, loving kindness and compassion, without them, any higher practice is basically meaningless. It is through loving kindness and compassion we can develop meaningful relationships with one another. And we can have a relationship that's sane and kind. We can develop these qualities of loving kindness and compassion to such a degree that the mere appearance of a little bug inspires feelings, overwhelming feelings of love and compassion. I remember in my three-year retreat some 10 years ago, we were visited with some mice, and we caught them. It was in the wintertime. We caught them, in a way that didn't hurt them. And we didn't know what to do with them. So we went to our teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, and said, what do we do with these mice that we've caught, these little tiny little creatures? He said, well, you're just going to have to keep them until spring, because if you let them out right now in the cold, they'll die. So here we were for about 6 months with these little mice. Little mice have this, I don't know what you call it, gestation period, is that the word? Where they reproduce rather quickly. So the three mice that we caught by springtime had multiplied, I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly how many, but there were many. So this is how you get in retreat, you get sort of crazy. So we put little playground in there for them. They had something to jump around in, and we had little rooms for them, and it was sort of like a paradise for them, and as a result, they reproduced quite prolifically. But in the spring, our cook took them out and put them in the park long ways away from the place, because we hear that if they were treated well, they'd want to come back. So it was miles and miles away. This was at the example and the teaching of our teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche. So when I am saying the mere sight of a living being, even the tiniest of beings, can arouse powerful feelings of loving kindness and compassion, it is true. And my teacher showed us that example. It wasn't always easy keeping these mice around, you know. You have to take care of them. And of course, we went overboard with it. But what we can say is that all practice of Dharma all practice of the truth is the development of loving kindness and compassion. If we have these sincere feelings, we don't need to say anymore, I'm going to work on my anger. I've got to work on my anger. You don't have to say that. Because the mere feeling of loving kindness and compassion itself liberates our egocentric notions and our neurotic patterns. You and I are incredibly fortunate because we have all kinds of opportunities right here, right now, in this life to practice. And the sad thing about that is you and I miss those opportunities every day. But we have them. One of the things that Kimball Carter Rinpoche, my teacher, who told us to keep the mice, one of the things he said was we have to understand karmic conditioning if we want to practice. He said one time, when we are at the edge of a cliff, it is possible to be mindful and careful and not fall off. Okay? But if we're not mindful and if we're not careful, getting at that cliff's edge and praying for wings is pretty crazy. It's just not going to happen. The point here being that if we're not training ourselves for that moment when we need to be loving and kind, if we're not training for that moment, we'll miss it. We'll fall off. And praying for or wanting to have loving kindness and compassion, it's likely not to emerge. So we train in that. We have to recognize we are responsible for training our own minds. The point is how we live, how we practice right now determines what our experience is going to be in the future. So if you want to be loving and kind in the future, you have to learn how to practice it now. For most of us, we're attracted to the romantic idea of being a loving and kind person, right? I mean, who doesn't want that? Really? I mean, everybody wants to be loving and kind and compassionate. But what happens when the rubber meets the road, when we meet up with an unpleasant, you know, we can do this easily if things are all nice and pleasant. But as you and I know, our experience is that it is not always pleasant. We can't always determine nice, pleasant experiences for ourselves. Things come in our road. And in those circumstances, it's not easy to be loving, kind, and compassionate. So we practice now. Otherwise, if we just have this superficial understanding and appreciation of loving, kindness, and compassion, it won't help in the moment of difficulty. So whatever spiritual practice you are doing right now, we need to maintain this attitude of loving kindness and compassion and the desire to benefit beings. That's why we started out the way we did with the refuge prayer, for the benefit of all beings. In the exercise of virtue on my part, may I benefit all beings. So we start out that way. Chandrakirti, who was a great teacher in the past, he did one important practice every day. He didn't bow to the Buddha or deities. His practice was every day he got down on his hands and knees and prostrated to loving kindness and compassion. Because he knew that it is through loving kindness and compassion he was going to wake up. That's how important it is. So for us beginners, formal practice is really important. It's those practices that you work out with your teachers and mentors. In the beginning of the practice, start with the idea of love for beings. You know, we sort of, if you've been around for a while, you will hear us frequently saying the refuge prayer. But each time we say it, if we could really recognize how important this was, it would be transformative in and of itself. That's why in many pujas you will hear the refuge prayer repeated for like a half an hour sometimes. That's how important it is in the beginning of any practice. So when we're doing the practice, so we begin with it, and when we're doing the practice, we're thinking of the benefit of other beings, and then at the end, we dedicate the merit of our doing the practice, again, for all beings, for their welfare. And in this way, we develop the skill that we need to love and have compassion, and at least, hopefully, cease hurting other beings. That's virtue too. You know, we're in a situation and we want to hurt somebody and we don't. That's the practice of virtue too. Not a small thing to do, not to hurt somebody. To do any of this requires what? Patience. It's the quality that we most need to develop. I'm smiling here right now because I'm thinking of all the times in the past week impatience arose in my own mind. But all the neurotic upheavals that we experience in our lives are directly the result of our impatience. An example of our impatience, say we do something really nice for somebody and we do it repeatedly over time and we don't see any thanks coming to us. Ever had that experience? And what do? Because of this neurotic upheaval, our ego, we start getting resentful and we lose the very motivation that we began with, which was to benefit them, not to gain recognition, not to get a big thank you, not to get a plaque, just wanting simply to benefit another being. Sometimes we think that, well, if I just go someplace off on a retreat for a few weeks, a nice mountaintop, watch the clouds go by, everything's going to be sweet and nice, and I can develop love and compassion in those circumstances. My dear brothers and sisters in the Dharma, I assure you that going off by yourself on a retreat will not of itself, in itself, create loving kindness and compassion, because as Pema Chodron has said, wherever you go, there you are. You heard that expression before? So, you know, not to say anything bad, there's anything bad about going on a retreat. I think they're wonderful, but there's preparation that's required, and the preparation is begin today to develop this loving kindness and compassion. Otherwise, you're just going to go and deal with your hateful self and work through it. Can be you can work through that through a retreat, but it's going to be a little harder. Many more obstacles will arise in that solitary situation because you've not worked on it before. So my advice is, if you go on a retreat, do a short one first. Don't try to do a long one. So for the practice of loving kindness and compassion, the best practice we can do is sending and receiving. They're really important. And you can do them on the cushion. In fact, I recommend it every time you sit down to do a little what they call Tong Lin, sending and receiving. In the out-breath, I give my goodness and my happiness. On the in-breath, I take in the negativities of beings, their confusion, their suffering, and their neurotic patterns. Just using the simple, natural breath to do this. Do that even before you begin meditation. And then at the end of that practice, once you've done it, Kimpo Karto Rinpoche recommends that we wind up by trying to experience the true nature of our mind, with nothing to let go of, nothing to receive, awareness of the mind beyond reference points. Really cool place to be, by the way. So begin with Tong Lin, and then just rest your mind. Best way, one of the best ways to begin developing this loving kindness and compassion. So beautiful. So to make the point again, practice, formal practice, is very important if you want to develop loving kindness and compassion. Now, let's look at something else. Off the cushion, it's really difficult to maintain this loving kindness and compassion for all beings, right? It's difficult. Someone insults us, someone insults our group, someone insults our nation. We feel abused. And what happens? Anger follows naturally in us. But if at these moments we can actually show patience and generate gentleness in those moments, yes, gentleness, generate that gentleness when anger might otherwise be our instinctual response. If we can do that, we develop loving kindness and compassion. So every moment of anger or annoyance we have in our lives once we leave here, this center, is an invitation to each of us to practice. It's not easy. Why? Because our habit is to get annoyed, to get angry, right? And quite honestly, it's not the general way our society operates. When someone abuses us or appears to abuse us or those we love, and we don't show some sort of self-righteous anger, if we don't show that, they don't think we're really being human. And yet, the most human response we can show, and I'll tell you why in a minute, the most human response we can apply to the situation is love and compassion. But again, what happens with us normally if we feel mistreated is, if we have power, we're going to defeat our enemy, right? We'll overcome them. We'll beat them up. We'll do whatever necessary to overpower them. Eye for an eye, right? On the other hand, say we're too weak to do that. Then what do? We wait. I'll wait my opportunity. It'll come. He won't or she won't be watching, and I'll take my revenge, and they won't even know it. Does it sound like I might have done this at some point? But as Buddhist practitioners, as spiritual practitioners, we're on the path of sanity, and there's nothing more insane than the idea of an eye for an eye. It is sane to be patient. So, in the face of people that hurt us, in the face of people that mistreat us, when we would otherwise have strong feelings of revenge or anger, we show gentleness and patience. Why? Because there's different ways of thinking of this, and this is called mind training. And one of the ways of thinking of this is to think, this person that is so angry, coming after me, so crazy, they really are crazy. They are possessed by this pleasure, this afflictive emotion. They can't help themselves. They suffer. Most of the times, people that are angry don't really enjoy being angry. I mean, think of it yourself. Do you feel good when you get angry? Does it make you feel good? No. And if it makes you feel good, think of the consequences of what happened when you did get angry. How much hurt you produced. So, generating love and compassion for those that otherwise seem offensive is the right thing to do. It's the sane thing to do. Another mind training way to look at it is to think of the person's anger towards you as a karmic situation. The result of the harm you did, the confusion you had, and it's coming to fruition now. It's the result of the past harm you have done, either in this or previous lives. This is a pretty direct teaching from Kempo Karcher Rinpoche. It's direct and it's naked. It's telling you just straight out, most of the problem in your life is your own responsibility. That's a hard message to take. So if we see this as the result of this situation where I feel mistreated, if I can see that as the result of my past wrongdoing, then I can approach it from the standpoint of how do I appropriately deal with it. And one of the most important things is to recognize I'm not going to deal with this by recreating again the harm that I've done in the past. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to stop now. Because if I don't, if I continue what I have always done, which is to get angry, I'm going to create this situation in the future all over again. And this is a vicious cycle, you might say, of recidivism. We just keep doing it over and over. When do we have the sanity to stop? So in this situation where we feel mistreated, we show sympathy for ourselves, you know? And we show sympathy for the person who would mistreat us. Because we both are caught in confusion. We acknowledge this. I have done innumerable acts in the past that harm other beings. This person in front of me is simply acting out their own hurt, their own problem. And I should see them as if they were my child who has a sickness and illness. And I want to treat that in the best possible way. Think, if I had not committed this wrong in the past, I wouldn't be facing this situation now. You're holding yourself responsible, not for the mere sake of blaming yourself. What good's that? But it's the rational explanation of where you're at right now. It's where things are right now. And so you go through this difficult experience with others without their becoming an object of your retaliation and aggression. We will not be continuing this cycle of wrongdoing. There are other ways of looking at this, and it's again using mind training techniques. I can't go into all of them. Lama Kathy has some beautiful teachings based upon the Great Path of Awakening that teaches us different ways of approaching these kinds of situations and still maintain our sanity through loving kindness and compassion. I'm just throwing a few out here for you. Another way to look at this, and this is hard, another way to look at this is to see that person that's angry, that's causing you discomfort, that's causing pain for you, to see them as that person that's coming to you to teach the highest instruction possible in Buddhism. And that instruction is patience, loving kindness, and compassion lead to awakening. I have another thing. I'll finish up here. We'll finish up a little bit early. And if you have questions, will entertain those questions. But I wanted to end up on something that Kimba Carter Rinpoche said in this teaching, and he said, the essential and primary point of the Mahayana path, the great path, the path of loving kindness and compassion, the Mahayana, they call it, the great vehicle path. The primary and essential point is that by entering Buddhist paths, we have made a courageous decision by promising to work for the benefit of all beings and to reduce the harm we cause them. Society doesn't see it this way, but I think you and I can see maybe a little bit how this choice not to retaliate but to love is the most courageous thing we can do, and we can take that commitment in the Bodhisattva, which is the person with the great mind, the loving mind, the mind of awakening. We can make that commitment even though we know we will fail from time to time. We make this commitment, and that takes courage. And that's what this Buddhist path is all about. And he said finally, with that commitment to love no matter what, in whatever circumstance, he said, with that commitment, we can maintain a certain standard of dignity. When we look about our world right now, we see a great lack of dignity among human beings because of their confusion and our confusion. So this commitment to love and to be sane is for you and me to take the dignified path. The path to awakening. So if anybody has any questions or thoughts they want to put out there, I'll be glad to entertain them. Okay, if you want to come up to the microphone, if that's okay. Courageous person.
Hi, I'm Glory, and I'm concerned that I may victim blame as to people that have socioeconomic or just are members of groups that are not my experience. So, like, it could be politically, socioeconomic, other religions, mm-hmm. race, that I feel like I, because I don't understand, that I may victim blame.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for that question. We can use our religion and our practice to beat each other to death. And I've seen it happen. Some self-righteous person coming along and using what they believe to beat the other person over the head with what they believe. This practice, this mind training practice, is meant for you and me to transform our minds, not to beat each other up with it. You take the examples of the Jews in the Holocaust, or those enslaved in the past. Would you go up to anyone and say, that's because of your past karma? Oh my goodness. In this life, this small period of time from beginningless time until now and extending into the endless future, in this small period of time, looking out at the world, we see innocent victims all the time. I remember I worked in coal mines 30 years ago, and one of my fellow workers, he was a farmer also, he was having his child ride on the back of his lawnmower. It was riding lawnmower, and it had the cutting blade in the back. The child fell off and was killed. And I was Buddhist at the time, and he came up to me and he said, tell me it's his past karma. Now, there are innocent victims due to circumstances that came together. What I am saying, as a Buddhist, we also take the larger picture, the picture from beginningless time. Wrap our minds around that, huh? From beginningless time till now. And from beginningless time until now, you and I have committed innumerable deeds. In fact, I say a prayer in the morning which says, I've done everything from killing my mother and my father to wanting to kill the Buddha. That's for our mind training, for our learning. The only response we can give to those who have suffered such horrible harm is at the threshold of our seeing that, to have unbearable compassion and love and do whatever, anything we can to help alleviate and get rid of such horror. I was talking to Lama Kathy yesterday, and one of the teachings that Kempo Karthi Rinpoche taught is that there are such things as what he referred to adventitious circumstances. They arise. Say, for example, a great tsunami came along and swept away people. There would be innocent victims in that sweep. There would also be people that, whose karma was to be swept up, but there would be innocent victims within that. It's called adventitious karma, I guess we'd call it, something along those lines. An adventitious event that caused you harm. The other point that I would make, and you and I are not awakened beings, only a Buddha truly understands the nature of karma. And so we can't beat other people over the head with what we really don't understand. It's like that also. So for any number of those reasons that I've just given out, it is totally inappropriate, cruel, against all of our practice to approach someone who is grieving in the manner which they are, or mistreated in the way people are, and say, oh, it's your karma. That's crazy. It's not kind, it's not loving. Thank you so much for that question. We did talk a little bit before, and before the talk today, and I went up to her and I said, if this is a question in your mind, because she's new to the center, I said, bring that up. Thank you so much for doing that. This was unprompted.
Hello, Lama Tom.
Good morning.
One of the main reasons I'm attracted to Buddhism is sort of the attraction rather than the promotion and not condemnating any other religion. And I am a member of another program or fellowship, and something that you mentioned today about loving and kindness towards all. And one of the problems I struggle with is people that anger me or that I have a resentment towards. It's hard to find that loving compassion. And in this fellowship that I'm a part of, there's this one little simple tool, or it's a prayer. I don't know if it's necessarily Christian or not, but it's just a simple prayer. And when someone angers you or you frustrates you, you know, you say, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to them? God save me from being angry. They will be done. And I feel that it's, even though it's got like God in it and it's Christian and it's sort of like this, I feel like it's more Buddhist than anything, is to find that loving compassion for people that anger you. And so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
It's mind training, isn't it? I mean, when you're meeting this situation as you do, you have a slogan that you use, right? Perfect. Perfect. This is what we're trying to do with our minds when we come up against something that's really, and by the way, what you say is also true. It's difficult. It's not easy. And so we have this default mechanism, this default way of thinking that we can rely on, even when our feelings might wander off into anger. We have this default thing, this person is ill, this person is sick. This person, as I said before, is like my only child that's ill. There is no problem if anger arises in our mind when a person does something. That's not a problem. It's if we do not recognize it, if we do not then work on it, but our actions don't have to be polluted by the anger that we experience. They're two different things. This emotion arises. Gosh, this annoys me. I'm thinking this, you know? I'm thinking it, but I don't have to say it. I let a gap exist between what I'm thinking and what I do. My wife has said recently to me, you don't get angry much anymore. And I thought, oh my God, I've covered that up pretty good. But that's okay. You know, I'm learning. Silence is a great way to deal with this. So, but what I have to do, if I want that to be the outcome, I have to recognize, we get so embarrassed. You know, I'm a longtime practitioner. I'm embarrassed sometimes that this thing arises in my mind. No reason to be embarrassed. I'm not awake yet. So it arises in my mind. I acknowledge it. There it is. There it is, my old friend, anger. I have treated you so well for so long. I've given you so much attention. I've allowed you to rule my life. There you are, resentment. My old friend. But this time, I'm not going to treat you like my friend. I'm going to treat you, not this person, as my enemy. Actually, that person, as I said before, can be, if we think right, our greatest friend. So thank you. Yes. And if you could speak sort of loud, because I can't hear well, and the acoustics aren't...
Yeah, I really don't have much of a problem with that, so... Hi. So, as I continue to practice and learn more about sending and receiving, I find out how really insidious my ego is, or should I say ignorant my ego is. And I think I've talked with a lot of people, you know, and this is a common sentiment I hear, and I feel it, is I can have more compassion for an animal than I can for a human being. The other day I found a centipede drowned in my basement because of the floodwaters, and my heart sank. And I think about people in my life, even close people, and sometimes it's apathy. With enemies, sometimes it can be outright rage. And in trying to deal with that, what I noticed is that in doing sending and receiving, you know, I do wish for that person I perceive as an enemy, to be to achieve enlightenment. However, the trick in my mind is, I hope that they come to a place of utter ruin and desperation that will lead them to enlightenment. And then counter, I'm like, and I've come really late in my thing to Pema Chodron and what she teaches about radical acceptance. Yeah. So being okay and working with that in myself, but yet keeping motivation to move.
Yeah. So what you say is true. It is so true. It is sometimes, I have a dog, Lucy, and sometimes she's much easier to love than bless her heart, I hope she's not listening, my wife. But I also say, give yourself credit. The fact that you do love little critters shows the nature of your mind. Okay? So give yourself a break. So it is practice, and it takes time. And so when you come to that point in your process of working through your resentment or anger, where there's this familiar part where you say, you know, I hope they reach full disillusionment. That's your enemy, and that's the part you have to work on a bit. All the other parts sound pretty good. We have to treat ourselves with sympathy and love too. We can't beat ourselves up. This is a process, it takes time. And the first person we have to give love and compassion to is ourself. Because if we can't give it to ourselves, we're going to be poor vehicles of giving love and compassion to others. Thank you for that. That's very good. Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Madave.
Welcome.
Thank you. One of the questions that I have is, we're supposed to show love and compassion. What does that look like in a more harmonious way with boundaries? Especially since love comes in many different forms and hate and anger is a part of that. So how do you show that with boundaries without ending up kind of like a doormat? Or end up having yourself depleted?
Thank you for that question, it's excellent. We should never advise another person, nor should we advise ourselves to take on abuse, ever. We talk about dignity. There's a dignity about ourselves. And so it is right, it is just, it is loving and kind to say to someone, no more. And to extricate ourselves from any situation that might cause you violence. The other thing to remember too is that's also being loving and kind to that other person, because when they mistreat you, when they cause you harm, what happens to them in the future? We believe that that is karmic and will produce suffering and unhappiness in their life. So by setting boundaries, you're not only creating goodness for yourself, but you're helping that person not to create harm for themselves now or in the future. So, excellent point. We should never misconstrue the teachings to mean that we lie down and become the object of someone's abuse. Now, if we were a Buddha, but we're not, if we were a Buddha and someone wanted to take our hand and cut it off, we would give our entire body. But we're not there yet. So we don't do that. We set boundaries, and they're important. I worked at Children's Services for some 30 years and worked with women who were horribly abused. I could never imagine saying to them, go back and take the abuse, or not set the boundaries, or not get out of the situation. In fact, we say run from the situation. Time for one more question? Yes.
Is anger ever appropriate?
What I said before was anger will arise in our minds, whether it's appropriate or not. So, to express anger, to hurt somebody else, is never appropriate. To use our anger to hurt somebody else is never appropriate. What I can do when this anger arises, recognize it. And if I can just recognize it as nothing other than mere energy, I can take that energy and act very skillfully in the situation to help that person that might otherwise harm me. But that's a high practice. That takes a bit of effort, a bit of time to be able, because it takes a meditative skill to be able just to say, ah, here it is. My anger, it's energy, it's doing this thing to my body, creating all these juices, all these hormones. I'm going to use that skillfully to help that other person. That takes a lot of skill. So to answer your question, whether or not it's appropriate, anger is going to arise. The question is, do we handle it appropriately? That's the issue. Yeah. Thank you. Well, we do have to end here. As I said before, what do we do at the end? We dedicate the merit for all beings. So we take the dedication of merit. And let's say it in English. It's on our sheet there. By this merit, may all obtain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy wrongdoing from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path. I completely dedicate all this virtue. Again, thank you so much for being here, and hope to see you again soon. Have a great week, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.